Good evening and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. I'm your host, Michael Gray, and in today's show, we'll be talking about conscious, compassionate awareness. We'll be taking your calls and responding to your email questions. So keep it tuned here, and we'll be right back.
To reach a show host or guest during the live show, dial toll-free in North America, 866-613-1612. Or, if outside the USA and Canada, dial 001-858-268-3068.
Good evening, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Hi, Sherry.
Hey, Michael.
How are you?
I'm good. Yourself?
I'm good.
I'm great, as a matter of fact.
Oh, you're great.
I'm great. I got to confess, I am.
You're great.
I'm a happy human.
Wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
That's good news.
Yeah.
So what shall we talk about today?
Conscious, compassionate awareness.
Conscious, compassionate awareness.
And hopefully folks will call in.
Hopefully folks will call in. That would
be. They'll want to talk about that too?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And in fact, we have a caller already.
Oh, good.
I'd like to welcome Paul from Mountain View. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Good
evening, Paul.
Yep.
Paul, are you there?
Yep, I'm there.
Okay, great. Sherry?
The bad news is I can't hear Paul if he's answering you.
Oh.
Okay, how about now?
All right, Sherry, can you hear him any better now?
Is he? Not if he's talking currently.
Okay.
Sorry.
Paul, if you could speak up a little bit, that would be really helpful.
Yeah, okay. Or would it be better for me to try calling in again?
Actually, just try speaking up, and we'll go from there. See if Sherry can hear you.
Is this working?
Sherry, can you hear Paul yet?
I can't.
Cannot. Okay. Let me see if I have any. How about now, Paul?
Okay, here I am.
There you are. Hello, Paul.
All right.
So, how are you doing, Sherry? I guess I've also already heard that you're a happy human.
I'm a happy human.
Good.
Mm-hmm.
Good. That's why I'm showing up at the table.
What's going on in your life?
I had an interesting experience around expectations that kind of blew me away, and I just don't know who else to talk to about it.
Uh-huh. What happened?
So, a couple of weeks ago, I was at a dance class, and I met somebody, and we really got along well. We met up, I don't know, over the course of a couple of weeks, a few times, and had a really good time. And then a couple of days ago, she went home. She lives on the East Coast. And my expectation was that when she left or after she left, that I would really kind of fall apart emotionally. But that didn't happen at all.
Hmm.
And I'm kind of just sort of wondering what happened or didn't happen.
And, of course, conditioning wants to just come right in and make it mean something, right?
Well, traditionally, I think that's what happens.
Mm-hmm.
And then, but this time, there was, like, just, you know, when we only had a few more minutes to kind of talk and then she had to go, I experienced a strange thing where I really had nothing to say and didn't feel like I needed to say anything. So we just kind of sat there and smiled. And it was just the weirdest thing.
Yeah, because what we would expect is that you would have an expectation that she would leave and you would be just fine. And in fact, you would fall apart.
Uh-huh.
And be surprised that you were so affected by this when you thought that. I mean, isn't that a more typical kind of expectation to have? I'll be fine. You know, it's not that big a deal, whatever. But to have it be completely the opposite Are there any voices that want to say things along the lines of, well, it must not have been that big a deal?
Yeah, I've heard a little bit of that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
because if you're not upset, it must not have been important.
Right, right. Like maybe this wasn't the experience I thought it was, because if it really was, I would be just crushed right now.
Yeah.
And I'm not.
Yeah. If you're not devastated, you just must not care that much.
Either I don't care or it wasn't that good mm-hmm. of a time or
mm-hmm.
there wasn't really much of a connection.
Yeah. So the way I usually talk about that is that emotions make things real.
Emotions make things real.
Yeah. Now, they don't, of course, but people believe they do. So if this woman leaves and you're devastated, then it must be love.
Right.
If she leaves and you just go right on with your life, well, obviously you didn't care.
Right.
So what we're saying is the level of emotion that I feel about this determines how real and how important it is.
Yeah.
And, of course, people get into a lot of difficulties because the way you respond to something emotionally and the way I respond to that same thing emotionally might be worlds apart. Then we have to figure out which one of us is right and which one cares more and which one is more sincere and which is more authentic and which is... But if we begin to question that whole premise,
right,
that emotion makes things real, that emotion determines how important something is, then all of that begins to fall away. You simply have the reaction to it or the response to it that you have. I have one I have. And we don't have to figure out whose is right, whose is better, whose is...
Right.
And, when we look at relationship, it gets, as you've noticed, really interesting. Because who knows? At some point, you might decide that you want to spend your life with somebody.
Yeah.
Now, do you want somebody to spend your life with somebody about whom you would feel devastation each time they left?
That would be a lot of overhead.
Yeah. Yeah. But we don't think about it that way. That's the romantic version of life. And so we want all that passion and all that angst and all that juice. And then when it goes away, of course, we decide that, well, I guess it wasn't the real thing because I don't feel that way any longer. But really, if you stop and think about it, how many things in life have you felt that way about for an extended period of time?
Right. Not that many.
Not that many. Well, I think the human system can't actually sustain it.
Well, I also noticed in this experience that there wasn't the traditional mapping. Like, I could never really predict how I was going to feel.
Uh-huh.
And so it really started to call into question for me the link between kind of what happened or didn't happen or was going to happen and how I felt.
Uh-huh.
Or the emotions that I had. So, for instance, we got together Thursday and then Saturday. And Friday was really rough for me, even though I knew I was going to see her on Saturday. And I wouldn't have predicted that.
Uh-huh.
And so it just got to this point where, kind of like when I was having trouble, I almost didn't want to try to explain it. Because I just couldn't explain it. Like if I was sad, I was sad, and that was just what was happening right then. And then it wasn't.
Right.
And then... At the end, well, I thought I was going to be sad, and then I wasn't.
Yes.
And that's just what happened.
That's just what happened.
And
it doesn't have to mean anything.
Yeah.
It doesn't. In fact, it doesn't mean anything.
Yeah, I think that's what's underneath.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but there's a feeling of control, isn't there, when we know what something means. You know, it's like, okay, I'm on top of this. You know, I get it. I understand what's going on here. And so I'm in charge because I can predict what's going to happen next, and I know who I am, and I know. But it's all made up.
And, you know, it works perfectly right up until it doesn't.
Yeah. And it doesn't a lot.
Yeah, and then it's
just
a shock,
that we just gloss right over the "it doesn't,"
yeah,
and go right back to our belief system.
Right.
Wow. Well, what a big adventure.
Yeah, it was really just kind of amazing.
Uh-huh. And the other thing that I would suggest that you consider in this is that the kind of introspective work that you're doing is going to result in a loss of identity.
Yeah.
So you can rest assured that increasingly you will know less about yourself. Isn't that an irony? Because we would think, you know, doing introspective work, we would know more about ourselves. But we don't.
Yeah, it's like, well, I don't know, I notice more about kind of my patterns and habits,
mm-hmm,
and kind of like what I struggle with or how I react to things typically.
Mm-hmm.
But there's more and more mystery kind of in life in general, I think.
Yes, because what you're watching is conditioning, is karma.
Oh.
And so you're getting clearer and clearer about how all of that stuff works. And also, I would suggest, clearer that that's not you. So what's going to arise in that little configuration that we call Paul,
right,
in any given moment, you don't know before it happens.
Right.
Yeah. When we're just operating in conditioning, we do know. Because if something happens that isn't supposed to happen, we just ignore it or deny it or whatever, and go with the party line.
Yeah.
But when you're present, you have no idea. So now I'm sad, now I'm happy, this is working, I'm frustrated, I don't like this. Who knows?
Huh.
Makes life much more interesting, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's like I could go outside and sit on the sidewalk, and that could be very, very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kind of nice.
It's very nice.
Yeah.
It's very nice. It's also pretty inexpensive.
Yeah.
And
and
low maintenance, because as soon as whatever is going on becomes fascinating, okay, you're set.
Yeah.
Mhm. All right.
But thanks so much, Sherry.
Thank you. Take care.
Thanks for joining us, Paul. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. Sherry, we have another caller.
All right.
I'd like to welcome William from Pennsylvania. Open Air with Sherry Huber.
William.
Hello, Michael. Hello, Sherry.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm good. You?
I'm nervous, as this is my first time calling in.
Uh-huh.
And actually was just listening to the last gentleman and had some things I had in mind to say, which may, some of his things may come up as well, but the loss of identity was, that phrase, you know, triggered something with me. But I'm new to the practice, learning about it. I guess I saw you up in New York last, what was that, April?
Oh, uh-huh, yeah.
At the Integral Yoga Institute.
Yes, a lovely place.
Very nice.
Mm-hmm.
So my question or the thing I'd like to talk about is a little bit of my process. I've for quite some time, I guess I've battled a bit with depression and things like that, and I'm getting more and more aware of the voices in my head and becoming a little bit better at, actually, I guess, significantly better at detaching from them, at least being able to recognize them as voices and be outside them as a spectator rather than maybe in them.
Uh-huh.
However, I guess the concept of sort of a nurturing, caring mentor or sort of supportive, compassionate voice is one I have a lot of difficulty accessing or even knowing if it's there.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess it feels like a lot of my life when I look back at it now, I feel like I identify with the with those voices, and they, you know, they've really been me, the desperate, this desperate kid especially.
Uh-huh.
And when I think about having sort of a more of an adult inside me that I can rely on, I have a difficult time finding him.
Uh-huh. Okay, or, well then let's do the standard questioning process here. Have you had someone like that in your life? Did you have an older brother, an uncle, a grandfather, that sort of thing?
Not when I was younger. I think it was more in I've worked with a therapist who is very much I see as a very sort of nurturing, caring adult voice.
Uh-huh.
And some other friends that I've gathered in the last several years, some I've picked up through, you know, some, you know, personal growth workshops, things like that, that, you know, feel like safe people.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I mean, I think a big thing is, I could just throw this out, is like when I'm around my family of origin, which, for better or worse, just in the last couple of years I've been around a lot, there's almost a sense of when I'm with them, there's no adult present. I mean, I don't feel like there's. It feels like a lot of reactive children.
Oh, inside you and outside you. That in the whole family, there aren't any adults.
It doesn't feel like it. At least, I mean, that sounds pretty judgmental.
Yeah.
But I just feel, I don't always feel that safe, and I don't feel like there's someone there who I feel really safe with.
Yeah. So no unconditionally loving presence in your family of origin.
Correct.
Okay. And so how about people in your life that you have felt unconditionally loving or accepting toward? Any young people, sibling or best friend or that sort of thing that you feel like you can be around and be non-judgmental toward and accepting of and understanding, and, you know, you think this person is great regardless of how they see themselves?
I immediately want to say that, yes, I've had that experience, I believe, although I don't know if it's felt consistent. I don't know if I've been able to feel that consistently with one particular person, perhaps. I maybe have had times that I feel that way with someone.
Uh-huh.
What just popped in my mind was one that maybe I can think of more because of his youth, you know, is my nephew. And I try and imagine how I just see him as a beautiful little individual that I just want, you know, I want the best for.
Yeah.
And
if he came to you with problems that were really, how old is he?
He is 6.
Oh, God, what a great age, huh? And so he's starting to get those big old doses of conditioning. And so if he comes to you and he's upset about something and feeling bad about himself or feeling inadequate or that sort of thing, do you feel like you can talk to him in an accepting, compassionate, kind way?
I feel that I could. And I guess my one little caveat there is if it happens to be like a family situation where I'm identified with my scared little kid, I don't know if I'll be able to, you know, it's almost like I don't know how readily I'll be able to access that for him.
Yeah, well, that's the problem we're all up against, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because you can find that mentoring presence in yourself, but if you get identified enough frightened enough, upset enough, whatever, then that's what you're going to go with, rather
right.
than stepping back into that mentoring presence. And so, you know, this is where we do a lot of little tricks and exercises to bring that mentoring presence out more. And one of them, I can't remember if we talked about this, but you may have done it in other places, the dominant hand, dominant, non-dominant hand journaling.
Okay, yeah. I don't think I've ever, well, I maybe tried it once.
Okay. So it's easy. You know, you just put your pen in the dominant hand and say to yourself, you know, write to yourself, what should we talk about? And then you put the pen or the pencil in your non-dominant hand, and you let whatever part of you answer. And it's just a spooky kind of a process. You know, it's one of those, okay, this is hokey, but, wow, you can't argue with the results. So you just start letting the more centered part of you have conversations with various aspects of you, frightened or upset or angry or whatever. Hang on. Excuse me. Got a little tickle. And you practice. And what you're practicing there is being unconditionally accepting, you know, letting a part of you talk and be there and be present. But mostly you're practicing what it feels like to evoke the mentor, because that's what you're doing. You know, you sit down, and essentially you're saying, okay, mentor, here's the pen. And then after a while, when doing that, you can be in conversation with the mentor. So you, as grown up as you are, say, in this conversation, you know, you come in and you write down, okay, you know, I feel like I need more access to this mentoring. And then you let the mentor answer.
Okay.
And you're just practicing, going back and forth. Okay, when you're around, do you spend time with your nephew?
Unfortunately, no. They live about 5 hours away. So.
Oh, okay. So not that much. Look around at friends who have children and that sort of thing in small doses. You know, just be around them and watch what arises in you and, you know, just kind of the psychology of it. When you were around small children, we get to watch what happened to us at that
right.
stage in our own development. And so you'll probably watch several things. An affinity with the child, you know, that kind of connection. Also the judgmental parenting reaction that happened to you when you were at that stage. And then practice just asking the mentor to come in and to have that unconditional acceptance in yourself, so that
right.
you can, again, so that you can feel that. Okay, and it's a practice.
Right. I was going to ask if.
Pardon me.
I was going to ask actually. Is it something? I remember the one time I did it. It felt like I didn't really trust this mentor, or I didn't feel like it.
Oh, you can count on that. What I talk about as egocentric karmic conditioning is going to come up and try to talk you out of all of this. That's hokey. That's stupid. It's not really real. That's not mentoring. You're just faking it. You're making this up. That's just that self-hating mechanism that's there trying to keep you stuck and suffering. So
the practice.
Yeah, you
is
can
what
just
helps
there. Yeah, you just know that that's going to be there. And so when you hear that, don't believe that that's you. You know, just out of the corner of your eye, take a little look at who's saying that. And the more you practice, the more you'll feel all of those ways of being present at the same time. And you're just moving back and forth between them. And more important than moving back and forth between them is that you are observing, you're aware of that movement back and forth.
Right.
And then you'll let me know what happened.
Yes, I will.
Okay.
Yes, I will. Thank you, Sherry.
Thanks for calling in.
All right, you're welcome.
Good night.
Good night, Michael.
Good night. Thanks for joining us, William. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. We're going to break now, and we'll be back in a couple of minutes. Coming up next in our second half of today's Open Air, we'll be continuing our conversation on conscious, compassionate awareness. We'll be taking your calls and responding to your email questions. So keep it tuned here, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we have another caller and then two more after that.
All right.
Busy lineup today.
Uh-huh. That's a good thing.
I'd like to welcome Isha from Cobb, California. You're on Open Air with
Sherry
Huber.
Hi, Michael. Cobb, California.
Cobb, California. It's by Middletown.
I know it very well.
Oh, you too.
I do. I had relatives who lived in Upper Lake and Lower Lake and...
Ah.
I kind of grew up around Lakeport, and I know where you are.
Oh, good. It's pine trees and oak trees.
It's very beautiful.
It is.
Yeah. Well, what's going on up there?
Well, last time we talked, it was about a year ago.
Well, a lot's been going on, I bet.
You said, you stopped me and you said, what you've got to get is every piece of information conditioned mind gives you is a lie. And that was very, that changed my life.
That's what?
That changed my life.
Oh.
You know, I've been doing the practice, but that, I'd forgotten about that. You know, it's like, well, some things are true and some things aren't.
Uh-huh.
So.
And what you have proved to yourself is, no, in fact, we don't have to listen to those voices of conditioning to see when they're telling us the truth and when they're lying. What we can know is it's all lies. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's big, isn't it?
It is really big.
And so relaxing.
Little spaces of quiet.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Every once in a while.
Yeah. Great.
So, you know, I find myself going along in life, and then all of a sudden I notice that I'm frowning or snarling, I used to believe that, and I still do, but then I notice that I'm not happy, and I must be listening to conditioning again.
Uh-huh. And it gets subtle, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, there's the beating us over the head, telling us what rotten, lousy excuses for human beings we are. That's one level of it. And then there's the, you could this, or, I don't think he really took that well. There's that level of it. And then there's just the... the kind of thing many of us were raised with where mother or father, whoever was the power figure, you know, would just kind of raise an eyebrow, give you the look, and you knew that you were in big trouble, you know, that one. And so it's not even there aren't even words that go with it. It's just a sensation, just a little twitch in the body, and the information is right there. It all means the same thing. Of course it doesn't, but that's the conditioned reaction to it.
Yeah, we have such a habit of listening.
Mm-hmm. And looking, habit of looking at other people or at situations to confirm what our conditioning is telling us is true. You know, so I'm talking to somebody and they kind of look off into the distance and sigh. Well, I know they're bored. You know, they don't have to tell me. You know, I know what that means. But of course, I don't know what it means.
Mm-hmm.
And we rarely check it out because why would I want to make myself vulnerable like that? Do I need them to spell it out for me? And conditioning uses a lot of those kinds of assumptions to keep us in that level of suffering.
Yeah, just the look.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I even started thinking, well, that everything, inner voices and outer voices, I have this it's a quote from, I guess, When You're Falling, Dive, and I have a little heart on my window, and it says, if the voice isn't loving, don't listen to it, don't follow it, don't believe it, no exceptions. And I think that applies, I started thinking, well, that applies to every voice, inner or outer.
Yes. Yeah, it does. Because that's the other place it shows up a lot, isn't it? Well, there are a lot of places it shows up. But, you know, I may have stopped beating myself up, but I surround myself or I continue to have people in my life who are doing the same thing to me. I keep myself in situations that prove to me that I'm unworthy or unlovable or whatever it is. Or we can even do the thing of surrounding myself with externals that mean that. So I pick activities that don't make me feel good. You know, I eat stuff that isn't good for me, or, you know, I don't get enough sleep, or whatever it is. Lots of ways of perpetuating the information that says you're not happy, and the reason for that is you don't deserve to be happy. And here's the proof.
Yeah, I guess, I mean, I have a neighbor that's I'm having difficulty relating. I mean, she just makes me feel like she hates me. But I guess, you know, I don't have to take it personally. That's how I can not get caught up in that one.
Yes.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to mean that. For years, when I've done workshops for years, and in the beginning when I did them, people would get up and leave the room, and I mean, I completely lose my focus because it's like, where are they going? Why are they, you know, are they coming back? What, you know? And sometimes, you know, when you have an issue like that, it's like life seems to get right on board with it. So, you know, I'd be in a workshop, and it'd be a 2-day workshop, and half the people wouldn't come back the second day, you know. And then what do I make that mean? You know? And over the years, of course, what I've realized is I can't control people's life experience. I don't know what they're doing. I don't know what they're thinking, what they're feeling. You know, I talked to you a year ago, right?
Uh-huh.
If I wanted to take that personally, you know, I could say, well, geez, what did I say? She never called back again.
Oh, that would have been...
Yeah. So, you know, to really get it.
It's all fear of calling, you know, basically.
Right. And so if we can get it, just that basic kind of, I'm not the center of everyone's universe, you know, it's so obvious and it's so hard for us to get.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So there's one thing that I'd really like to do because, buying myself a gift when conditioning tells me that I've made a mistake, and I've managed to do it with a bouquet of flowers to take care of all my mistakes, but and that felt really good, but I haven't been able to do it again. I get talked out of it.
So that's one of the places that it really gets you is with mistakes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and so you're still believing that mistakes are possible.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, I do. I really believe that. I guess I just have to, I don't know what to do.
Uh-huh. Well, of course, there are lots of approaches to it. I like the logical, rational approach myself, but it doesn't work for everybody. For me, it is not logical to believe that something could be different from what is. So you couldn't have possibly made a mistake because you are here where you are. And so everything that it took to get you here where you are is what it took to get you here where you are. So, you know, the voices would say things like, yeah, but if you had taken that job with, or if you had stayed in that relationship, or if you'd bought that house when, and yet we don't know. You know, if we could actually, this is like all the, you know, the science fiction stuff, but there we follow her off, and she's made these other choices, and she's dead now. Because she was in that car that went off that road that, you know. So it, to me, it's just, it's not logical. That's the only way I can say it. You know, there just isn't an alternative to what is. And so in each and every moment, you went with what is. We cannot argue with that. There is no other reality in which you did something else. And so here you are. And at the moment that you become ecstatically happy with yourself and with your life, you will be so deeply grateful that you took every single step that you took, because you'll know that it was only by taking every one of those steps that you were able to get to this ecstatic here and now. You'll have to.
I hear you. The belief system is really deep on that one.
Yeah. Well, if you can get it, that it's only there to cause you to suffer. For instance, my mother died when I was really young,
mm-hmm.
and for a time, I went through a lot of things that people always go through. I've subsequently found out under those circumstances, you know. If I had gone home that weekend, if I had this, if I had that, if whatever, if I had done something different, then this wouldn't have happened. Okay? Well, all right. Let's say that that's true. But just, you know, let's say that that's true. But I didn't. And so what possible benefit could there be in going over that information again?
None.
The only result is I would feel bad. And there you have it.
Yeah,
the sum total of the point of that
job.
Yeah, of being told that you've made a mistake is that you feel bad. If you could fix it, if you could change it, you know, if there were anything you could do about it now, I would say, go for it. You know, go through it one more time and make that change. But nothing happens except you feel bad. So I would just encourage you to consider that it's an indulgence.
Okay.
That it's really a place of colluding with conditioning to make yourself feel bad. And maybe to look at, do I need to feel bad? Is that, you know, am I kind of a little holding pattern here, and you know, I'm not ready for all the happiness that that might come to me if I stop doing this. That's okay, but just to bring some conscious awareness to it.
That rings a bell.
Yeah. So you know, I walk out of my front door, step off the porch, and fall down, and I do that every time I walk out the door. You know, at a certain point, I have to stop and say, now what's going on here?
Yeah.
So if it's a conscious choice, I'm getting something out of it, that's great. But if I'm not, then I need to figure out how not to do that.
Thank you.
Okay, your assignment, should you choose to accept it, don't wait a year, okay?
No, I accept it.
All right, good.
All right. Thank
Take
you.
Take good care.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Isha. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Ready for another caller, Sherry?
I am.
All right. I'd like to welcome Joan from Cape Coral, Florida. You're Sherry Huber.
Yes, hi. I can't hear you so well, but can you hear me okay?
Joan, I can hear you.
Oh, great. Oh, okay. That's great. I've just discovered you 2 weeks ago in a bookstore. Your book, the depression book, fell in my hands practically. And I've read it, and it's just blowing me away. And this weekend I went out and bought How to Get from Where You Are to Where You Want to Be. Now, that one's really pretty tough for me because all this is really new to me.
Uh-huh.
But I do have a question, and I realize I'm just at the very tip of this. But
you know what?
At the very tip of, you know, learning all of this.
That's right. But I just got to tell you, it's the very best place to be.
Oh,
it's just the most wonderful place to be. May you always be at that place.
Oh, how sweet. Thank you so much. That's so beautiful.
Yeah. It's like the first moments of falling in love.
Oh.
It's glorious.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's such a nice way to look at it.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so here's my question. I've been in therapy for years. I stopped, maybe 5 months ago or something. But I figured after 30 years of therapy, if I didn't get it, I wasn't going to ever get it. No, I got a lot of it. I mean, I'm not the person that I was. But,
yeah.
However, the depression is still as severe as it was.
Mm-hmm.
So I saw this book, and I started to read it, and this is what confused me about it, or something that I just didn't understand. When you're talking about the awareness practice,
mm-hmm.
you mentioned, like, not resisting mm-hmm. something that, you know, that's like I would be resisting my depression, or mm-hmm. I also have an eating disorder, and so I'm constantly resisting foods that I shouldn't have, and then, you know, eventually wind up giving into it.
That's right.
So I'm in Overeaters Anonymous, and my question is, does what you're teaching, is it contradictory to being in, like, a 12-step program?
No.
It's not?
No, it's not. Although a number of people have said, this is, like, the next step.
Uh-huh.
So it's, no. All I ever encourage people to do is pay attention to everything.
Mm-hmm.
So you read the depression book. You know that I what I say to people is, do it all. Just pay attention.
Right.
You know,
right.
Join every group you can. Get as many buddies as you can. Be in therapy if that works for you.
Mm-hmm.
Find every possible support system that you can find on the way to being the ultimate support system for yourself, because that's what it really comes down to.
Right.
You know, when you are living 24 hours a day with somebody who loves you more than life itself.
How beautiful.
Most of the problems of life are going to fall away.
Mm.
And nothing will change about life.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Nothing will change, no?
Huh?
Nothing will change?
Nothing will change. I mean, it won't keep you from getting sick. It won't.
Oh, right, right.
Yeah, it won't save you from accidents. You're still going to die. But the quality of the life that you're living is so different, and it's kind of like every back to falling in love. You fall in love. Fortunately, the person you fall in love with thinks you're the most wonderful thing that ever happened, and suddenly, even though everything about life is the same, you know, you have to go to work, there's not enough money, you know,
mm-hmm.
it doesn't matter because the two of you are together and you're in love.
Right.
Yeah. So that's the relationship that we're going for with ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And it's absolutely possible. In fact, I would go so far as to say it's our natural state.
Oh, that's so beautiful. It's so hopeful.
Oh, yeah.
So hopeful.
Yeah. And there are no shoulds about it. You don't need to hurry. You don't have to give anything up. You don't have to, you don't have to get on a program of what to change about yourself.
Uh-huh.
It's just unconditional acceptance. So do you go on our website? Are you on our
Yes,
email?
I have gone on your website a few times now.
Okay.
Right.
Well, sign up for get on our email list, okay?
Right.
We'll try not to overwhelm you, but on the 20th of every month, sort of, I send out an email to everybody, and this one is on self-acceptance.
Okay.
And I'd like you to read it. I mean, if you don't want to get
no,
it.
No, it sounds wonderful. I did sign up for something the other day. I was signing up for everything I could possibly,
yeah.
But I don't
Peace
know if I signed
quotes.
Up for the email list.
Yeah, Peace Quotes is another good thing. And this will turn up on the website sooner or later.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the whole, what I'm trying to encourage people toward is that self-acceptance is the whole deal. It doesn't matter how you feel, what you think, what you do, who you are. I think the way I talk about it is to wrap yourself in a blanket of self-acceptance.
Oh.
In the very moment that you have done whatever it is. And, you could have done something wonderful.
Right.
And you just stop and you just feel that unconditional love, that appreciation. Adoration, let's face it, for this miracle of a human being that you get to go through life with.
Oh, God, this is
beautiful.
And,
yeah, and so, you just practice that. You practice it. And she eats something that's not good for her. And instead of, oh, my God, and how could you, and the voices that come in, and they will come in.
Oh, absolutely.
Yes, they will. And within that, we're practicing the self-acceptance. You just turn around and say, hey, it happens. Does it mean you're unlovable? Heck no. Let's go for a walk and listen to the birds sing.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, Sherry, thank you so much.
Oh,
I loved everything you said. It's all so, I want to say otherworldly because it sounds heavenly.
Right.
Just,
good.
Honest, it's so beautiful.
Good. And you can go on the whatever and listen to this. Maybe download it onto your iPod if you have one or whatever so that you can listen to it periodically and just get a little reminder.
Right. That's wonderful. I love it.
All right.
God bless you. God bless you.
Okay. Bye.
Thank you so much. Bye now.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Joan. And Sherry, I think we have time for one more caller.
All right. It looks like it.
Yeah. I'd like to welcome Jacqueline from San Jose, California. You're on Open Air with Sherry Huber.
Good evening.
Thank you, Michael. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
We can.
All right. Well, since you're a self-described happy human.
Yes.
Don't we all want to be?
Well, and, it's just temporary. It's just, one of the reasons that I often respond that way when Michael asks me how I am is that I really enjoy doing this radio show. It's a lot of fun, and it makes me happy, and it's summer, and I live in a beautiful place, and, life is good.
Well, that beautiful place was Felton. Oh, that workshop there was wonderful about the compassionate self-discipline.
Uh-huh.
And that's where I saw you last, not this past weekend, the one before.
Uh-huh.
The question that we only have a few minutes, but since you're, this is from another workshop, actually, I went over notes. It was called Peace from the Inside Out.
Uh-huh.
So I had a little hole in my notes. It said, tell me the difference between happiness and contentment. So I was curious as to what difference, if any, there is between contentment and a feeling of happiness.
Well, that's one of those things. Now, see, I thought you were going to say the difference between happiness and pleasure, but happiness and contentment, to me, that's one of those things that it would be a fascinating study for you to do.
Mm-hmm.
So you're watching yourself, and it's kind of like, now this feels like happiness to me. Now, does it feel like contentment? Is contentment a calmer form of happiness for me? Is happiness a little higher energy? Or is happiness the more kind of quiet, grounded feeling, and when I'm higher energy, would I call it Okay? And it's not that we're actually trying to come up with the right word for it. It doesn't matter. To me, the fun part is the exploration. Hmm. So, you know, when we started that workshop in Felton, one of the things that I asked people to do, because it was on compassionate self-discipline, is define self-discipline. And I personally thought it was kind of a fascinating discussion. I remember one of the points that I made is that so often we don't actually look to see what our experience is. So we'll use a word or we'll say something, and we think we know what we mean by that, but we've never really stopped to take it all the way back to, well, what does that actually mean to me?
Oh, yeah, when we went around and we shared our word, mm-hmm. well, I was really taken aback when somebody said self-flagellation.
Right.
What? Mine was responsibility.
Uh-huh.
I felt comfortable with that, but, you know, I wasn't there to judge. I just nodded my head, and, oh, the words that came at me, with some of them were so harsh.
Yeah.
And remember, it's compassionate self-discipline. Oh, what was the thing was about what self-discipline means to you? You left
yeah.
out the word compassionate?
Yeah.
Is that the assignment? Oh, well, when you leave out compassionate and you just think self-discipline, well, then the harsh words come up all over the place.
Yeah.
And perhaps 10 years ago I would have said the same thing, but today I, with my over at CSE and, of course, being inspired by you and Reverend O'Brien to be more centered and grounded in my meditation practice, now I don't see self-discipline as a, you know, beating yourself up or, you know, that nun hitting you sharply on the wrist with a ruler. It doesn't have to be that way.
Right. It's more like you just got a new puppy, and you want that puppy to have a long, safe, happy life with you, and to love and trust you and want to be with you and that sort of thing. And so how are you going to train that puppy to achieve that result? And, of course, it's paying attention, it's being mm-hmm. present, it's being mm-hmm. kind and loving, it's being consistent and mm-hmm. trustworthy and clear and all of those kinds of things. And that's how we need to be with ourselves.
And you said come away and treat ourselves gently.
Mm-hmm.
I loved coming away with that. Oh, how many ways? It's like, how do I love thee? Let me count the ways.
Yes.
How many ways can I treat myself gently with
yes.
compassion?
Yes. And the beauty of that, of course, is as we learn to treat ourselves that way, it's much easier for us to treat others that way.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
So true. Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you. Namaste.
Good night.
Night.
Thanks for joining us, Jacqueline. You've been listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Thank you, Sherry.
Thanks, Michael. Next week?
Can we do it again next week?
Okay, sounds good.
Thank you, Sherry.
Till then.
Good night.
Good night.